Chapter 3. Bent low over the swoop bike's high hand grips, Thorsch threaded the rocketing vessel through concentrations of saplings and opportunistic Yuuzhan Vong plants, under looping vines and over the thick trunks of toppled trees. He hugged the fern-covered ground when and where he could, as much for safety's sake as to spare his spindly passenger any further torture from thorned vines, sharp twigs, and the easily disturbed hives of barb flies and other bloodsuckers. But Thorsch's best efforts weren't enough. "When do we get to switch places?" the Bith asked over the howl of the repulsor lift. Thorsch knew that the question had been asked in jest, and so replied in kind. "Hands at your sides and no standing on the seat." Taking into account only the difference in heights, the Bith should have been the one in the saddle, with Thorsch scrunched down behind him, fingers clasped on the underside of the long seat. But Thorsch was the more experienced pilot, having flown swoops on several reconnaissance missions where speeders hadn't been available. His large wedge-shaped feet weren't well suited to the foot pegs, and he had to extend his arms fully to grasp the hand-grip controls, but his keen eyes more than made up for those shortcomings, even when streaming with tears, as they were now. Thorsch kept to the thick of the large island, where the branches of the tallest trees intertwined overhead and provided cover. The swoop was still running smoothly, except when he leaned it hard to the right, which for some reason caused the repulsor lift to sputter and strain. He could hear the other swoop, to the east and somewhat behind him, weaving a path through equally dense growth. The four escapees would have made better progress out over the estuary, but without the tree cover they would be easy prey for coral skippers. One skip had already completed to return passes, paying out plasma missiles at random and hoping for a lucky strike. The morning air was thick with the smell of burning foliage. Flat out, the swoop tore from the underbrush into a treeless expanse of salt flats, pink and blinding white, the nighttime sleeping grounds for flocks of Selvarus's long-legged wading birds. Determined to reach cover before the coral skipper showed up again, Thorsch gave the accelerator a hard twist and banked the swoop for the nearest stand of trees. Thorsch had just re-entered the jungle when a clamor began to build in the canopy. His first thought was that another coral skipper had joined the pursuit. But there was a different quality to the sound, an eagerness absent in the deadly sibilance of a coral skipper. Thorsch felt his rider sit up straighter on the seat, in defiance of the hazards posed by overhanging branches. "Is that what I think it is?" the humanoid asked. "We'll know soon enough," Thorsch yelled back. Again he twisted the accelerator. Wind screamed over the swoop's inadequate fairing, forcing another flood of tears from his eyes. But his actions were in vain. The objects responsible for the escalating tumult passed directly overhead, silencing the racket of the swoop, then outracing it. "Lav Peck!" the Bith screamed. Thorsch knew the term. It was the Yuuzhan Vong name for netting beetles, voracious and meticulous versions of the winged sentinels that had roused the prison guards. Lav Peck were capable of creating webs between trees, bushes, or just about any type of barked foliage. Typically the beetles arrived in successive fronts, the first fashioning anchor lines, and those that followed feeding on bark and other organics to replenish the fibers needed to complete the filigree. A well-constructed web could ensnare or at least slow down a human-sized being. The strands themselves were tenaciously sticky, though not as adhesive as the enemy's blorash jelly. The Bith's hunch was verified as the swoop raced through the vanguard wave of the swarm. Within seconds, the down-sloping front cowling was spattered with smashed beetle corpses. Thorsch plucked several from his fur-covered forehead and threw them aside. Just ahead, thousands of Lav Peck were plummeting into the jungle, tearing through the leafy canopy like hailstones. Thorsch ground his teeth and lowered his head. As strong as the strands were, they were no match for a swoop in the right hands. 50 meters away, the first web was already taking shape. Thorsch squinted in misgiving. More tightly woven than any he had seen on other worlds, the web actually obscured the trees. It took only a moment to realize that Selvarus's species of netting beetle was special. While half the swarm was flying horizontally at various levels, the other half was flying in vertical rows. The result was a warp and weft weave, a veritable curtain that, for all Thorsch knew, could snare the swoop as easily as a spider web might a night fly. Extending his legs behind him, he flattened himself over the surging engine. With a distressed cry, the Bith followed suit, pressing himself to Thorsch's back. Thorsch cranked the accelerator for all it was worth, aiming for what he thought might be an area of relatively few trees. The swoop ripped through the webs at better than 200 kilometers per hour, each successive curtain parting with loud cleaving sounds that sometimes resembled screams. Rear guard beetles struck the cowling with the force of malleable bullets, and the Bith yelped in pain time and again. The swoop wobbled, and the repulsor lift began to howl in protest. Thorsch fought to hold on to the hand grips as they were yanked from side to side by the viscous strands. He risked an ascent, only to learn the hard way that the situation was even more perilous in the upper reaches of the trees, where the branches fanned out and the leaves were home to clouds of insatiable needle flyers. Refusing to give a centimeter, he demanded every last bit of power from the struggling machine. Then, all at once, the swoop tore through the final web. Sticky strands cooked on the superheated engine, sending out an acrid smell. Thorsch coughed strands from his throat and pawed others away from his stinging eyes. He brought the swoop to a halt just long enough to clear the exhaust ports and fan housing. His swearing passenger might have been wearing a long white wig. Thorsch had his right hand back on the accelerator when a pained shriek erupted from the jungle, punctuating the cacophony of bird calls. He heard a familiar roar, and not a moment later, the second swoop bobbed into view, bearing only the pilot. "The net's got him!" the Bith pilot shouted over the irregular throb of a choked engine. He twisted the accelerator to keep the swoop idling. "I'm going back for him!" Thorsch spit web from his mouth and scowled. "Don't be a fool! He's alive!" "Better that you are!" Thorsch interrupted. He jerked his bearded chin to the west. "The estuary! Get going!" Thorsch spurred the swoop through a quick circle and darted off into the trees, the Bith hanging on to what was left of the Jennet's flight jacket. Punching through the dense jungle that grew along the shore of the island, they found themselves back in the blinding light of Selvarus's double suns. Coaxing more speed from the rapidly failing engine, pilot and passenger leaned the swoop through a sweeping turn that carried them out over brackish water, inky with organics leached from the trees. They soared at top speed a few meters above the calm surface, racing past narrow meandering channels of pellucid fresh water, bubbled up from the planet's underground, and teeming with brilliantly colored fish. From the far shore came the urgent woofing and snarling of bishop hounds, galloping through swamps and across berms of scalpel grass. The harsh barks were accompanied by the war cries of Yuuzhan Vong chase teams running behind the pack. Thorsch banked just in time to avoid a horde of thud and razor bugs that whirled out of the trees, passing within centimeters of the swoop and tearing into the opposite shoreline. Drawn by the commotion, schools of sharp-toothed predators, showing multi-finned backs and serrated tails, leapt from the water to gorge on the airborne weapon bugs. Wide-winged raptors with huge wingspans left the fungus-filled cavities of dying trees to glide down and grab whatever bugs the aquatic behemoths missed. Thorsch pulled at the hand grips and sent the swoop into a steep climb. The saline water grew more agitated beneath them as the mouth of the estuary came into view, a line of white where curling waves broke against the marshy shore. Hundreds of white-cliffed islets, straight as towers and draped with vegetation, rose from out of the aquamarine ocean. On the horizon, a volcano mounded from the water, great clouds of smoke billowing from its crater and bleeding a thick river of lava that turned part of the sea to steam. Thorsch scanned the otherwise clear sky for signs of the coral skipper. A kilometer away to the east, the other swoop was paralleling him. Gaining altitude, the two machines sped out over the breaking waves, making for the narrow channel that separated the islets closest to shore. "Heads up!" the Bith said into Thorsch's right ear. His long-fingered hand shot out, indicating an object in the western sky. Thorsch tracked it and nodded, muttering a curse. The Yuuzhan Vong called it a Sikvai. Reminiscent of a seabird, it was an atmospheric search craft, its neck sac inflated and bright red as a signal to other craft in the area. Powered by a gravity-sensitive Dovin basal, the monstrosity had a transparent blister cockpit, flexible wings, and gill analogs that made it whine in flight. Thorsch threw his weight against the hand grips and leaned hard against the steering auxiliaries, slewing the swoop toward the closest island, intent on keeping as close to the white cliffs as he dared. The Sikvai was not unnerved. It dived for its small prey, whining and releasing several thin, cable-like grasping tendrils. Thorsch dropped back to the turbulent surface, swerved, and cut across the channel for the neighboring islet, running full out, a meter above the waves. The search craft was following him down, prepared to make another grab, when something nailed it from behind. Thorsch and Bith watched in bafflement as the Sikvai veered off course, one wing blown off, and spiraled out of control. It struck the sea with a loud splash, skipped twice on the waves, then crashed nose first and began to sink. Out of the eastern sky, dazzled by sunlight, something large and dull black was approaching at supersonic speed. Another Yuuzhan Vong vessel, Thorsch decided, whose pilot had just shot down one of his own craft to get to the swoop. Twitching the braking thrusters, he spun the swoop around in midair, hoping to race away from the mystery vessel before it could draw a bead on him. Even so, he waited for the fireballs to start falling. When they didn't, he glanced over his shoulder in time to see a twin-mandibled old freighter come streaking out of the cloudless sky. Thorsch felt crackling heat wash over him as the ship made a low, ear-splitting, teeth-rattling pass, its dorsal laser cannon loosing green hyphens of energy at a trio of pursuing coral skippers. The freighter signaled the swoops with a rocking motion, then banked into a long, sweeping turn to the south. "Looks like our ride's here," Thorsch said, "and in worse trouble than we are." A flurry of well-placed bursts from the freighter's top gunner caught the lead coral skipper head-on and sent it boiling into the sea. The other two enemy craft continued to pummel the freighter with plasma missiles. Perhaps frustrated by the ship's seemingly impenetrable shields, one of the skip pilots took aim on the Bith-piloted swoop. Caught in midair by a single lava-hot projectile, the machine disappeared without a trace. Thorsch clenched his jaws and steered the swoop for deeper water. The swoop was grazing the white crests of 5-meter waves when something enormous rose from beneath the heaving surface. "Cockmane's getting to be a pretty good shot," Hans said over the sound of reciprocating quad-laser cannon. "Remind me to up his pay, or at least promote him." Leia glanced at him from the co-pilot's chair. "From bodyguard to what? Butler?" Han pictured the Nogri in formal attire, setting meals in front of Han and Leia in the Falcon's forward cabin. His upper lip curled in delight, and he laughed shortly. "Maybe we should see how he does with the rest of these skips." The YT-1300 was just coming out of her long turn, with Selvarus's double suns off to starboard and an active volcano dominating the forward view. Below, green-capped, sheer-sided islands reached up into the planet's deep blue sky, and the aquamarine sea seemed to go on forever. Two coral skippers were still glued to the Falcon's tail, chopping at it and holding position through all the insane turns and evasions, but so far the deflector shields were holding. His large hands gripped on the control yoke. Han glanced at the console's locator display, where only one bezel was pulsing. "Where'd the other swoop go?"
"We lost it," Leia said.
Han leaned toward the viewport to survey the undulating sea.
"How could we lose?"
"No, I mean it's gone. One of the coral skippers took it out."
Han's eyes blazed. "Why that? Which one of them?" Before Leia could answer, two plasma missiles streaked past the cockpit, bright as meteors and barely missing the starboard mandible.
"Does it matter?"
Han shook his head. "Where's the other swoop?" Leia studied the locator display, then called up a map from the terrain sensor, which showed everything from the mouth of the estuary clear to the volcano. Her left forefinger tapped the screen.
"Far side of that island."
"Any skips after it?"
A loud explosion buffeted the Falcon from behind. "We seem to be the popular target," Leia said. "Just the way you like it." Han narrowed his eyes. "You bet I do." Determined to lure their pair of pursuers away from the swoop, he threw the freighter into a sudden ascent. When they had climbed halfway to the stars, he dropped the ship into a stomach-churning corkscrew. Pulling out sharply, he twisted the ship through a looping rollover, emerging from the combo headed in the opposite direction with the two coral skippers in front of him. He grinned at Leia. "Now who's in charge?" She blew out her breath. Was there ever any doubt? Han focused his attention on the two enemy craft. Over the long years, Yuuzhan Vong pilots faced with impossible odds had surrendered some of the suicidal resolve they had displayed during the early days of the war. Maybe word had come down from Supreme Overlord Shimra or someone that discretion really was the better part of valor. Whatever the case, the pilots of the two skips Han was stalking apparently saw some advantage to fleeing rather than re-engaging the ship their plasma missiles had failed to bring down. But Han wasn't content to send them home with their tails tucked between their legs, especially not after they had killed an unarmed swoop pilot he had come halfway across the galaxy to rescue. "Kakmame, listen up," he said into his headset mic. "I'll fire the belly gun from here. We'll put them in the money lane and be done with them." Money lane was Han's term for the area where the quad laser's firing fields overlapped. In emergency situations, both cannons could be fired from the cockpit, but the present situation didn't call for that. What's more, Han wanted to give Kakmame the chance to hone his firing technique. All Han and Leia had to do was help line up the shots. From the way the coral skippers reacted to the Falcon's sudden turnabout, Han could almost believe that the enemy pilots had been eavesdropping on his communication with the Nogri. The first skip, the more battered of the pair, showing charred blotches and deep pockmarks, poured on all speed, separating from his wingmate at a sharp angle. Smaller and faster, and seemingly helmed by a better pilot, the second skip shed velocity in an attempt to trick the Falcon into coming across his vector. That was the skip that had taken out the swoop, Han decided, sentencing the pilot to be the first to feel the Falcon's wrath. Leia guessed as much and immediately plotted an intercept course. Exposed, the skip pilot went evasive, moving into the gun sights and out again, but with mounting panic as the Falcon settled calmly into kill position. The dorsal laser cannon was programmed to fire three beam bursts that, all these years later, still had the ability to outwit the Dovan Basils of the older, perhaps more dim-witted coral skippers. While the enemy craft was quick to deploy a gravitic anomaly that engulfed the first and second beams, the third got through, blowing a huge chunk of Yorick coral from the vessel's fantail. Han tweaked the yoke to place the skip in the money lane, and his left hand tightened on the trigger of the belly gun's remote firing mechanism. Sustained bursts from the twin cannons whittled the skip to half its size. Then it blew, throwing pieces of coral wreckage in every direction. "That's for the swoop pilot," Han said soberly. He turned his attention to the second skip, which, desperate to avoid a similar fate, was jinking and juking all over the sky. Zipping through the showering remains of the first kill, the Falcon quickened up and pounced on the wildly maneuvering skip from above. The targeting reticle went red, and a target lock tone filled the cockpit. Again, the quad lasers rallied, catching the vessel with burst after burst, until it disappeared in a nimbus of coral dust and white-hot gas. Han and Leia hooted. "Nice shooting, Kakmame," he said into the headset. "Score two more for the good guys." Leia watched him for a moment. "Happy now?" Instead of replying, Han pushed the yoke away from him, dropping the Falcon to within meters of the surging waves. "Where's the swoop?" he asked finally. Leia was ready with the answer. "Come around 60 degrees, and it should be right in front of us." Han adjusted course, and the swoop came into view, streaking over the surface, bearing two seriously dissimilar riders. In pursuit, and just visible beneath the surface, moved an enormous olive-drab triangle, trailing what appeared to be a lengthy tail. Han's jaw dropped. "What is that thing?" Leia said. "'3PO, get in here!' Han yelled, without taking his eyes from the creature. C-3PO staggered into the cockpit, clamping his hands on the high-backed navigator's chair to keep from being thrown off balance, as had too often happened. Han raised his right hand to the viewport and pointed. "'What is that?' he asked, enunciating every word. "'Oh, my,' the droid began. "'I believe that what we're looking at is a kind of boat creature. The Yuuzhan Vong term for it is Vangok, which derives from the verb to submerge, although in this case the verb has been modified to suggest, skip the language lesson and just tell me how to kill it. Well, I would suggest targeting the flat dome, clearly visible on its dorsal surface. A headshot. Precisely, a headshot. Han, Leia interrupted, four more coral skippers headed our way. Han manipulated levers on the console, and the Falcon accelerated. We gotta work fast. 3PO, tell Meowal to activate the manual release for the landing ramp. I'll be there in a flash. Leia watched him undo the clasps of the crash webbing. I take it you're not planning to land. He kissed her on the cheek as he stood up. Not if I can help it. The swoop fought to maintain an altitude of 8 meters, but that was enough to keep it from the snapping jaws of the Yuuzhan Vong Vangok that had almost snagged it on surfacing. Thorsch might have opted to head inland if the Yuuzhan Vong search parties and their snarling beasts hadn't reached the marshy shore. Worse, four specks in the northern sky were almost certainly coral skippers, soaring in to reinforce the pair the YT-1300 was chasing. Instead, the Jennet had the swoop aimed for deeper water out toward the volcano where the waves mounted to a height of 10 meters. Thorsch and his rider could feel the sting of the saline spray on their scratched and bruised faces and hands. Behind them, the Vangok was rapidly closing the gap, but if it had weapons other than torpedo analogs, it wasn't bringing them to bear. An unsettling vociferation from the Bith broke Thorsch's concentration. The Vangok's gone. It's submerged. Thorsch didn't know whether to worry or celebrate. The Vangok put a quick end to his indecision, breaching the surface in front of the swoop, the dull olive triangle spiked straight up out of the waves, venting seawater from blowholes on its dorsal side and opening its tooth-filled mouth. Thorsch demanded all he could from the swoop, climbing at maximum boost, but there was no escaping the reach of the creature. He heard a surprised scream, then felt his flight jacket rip away. Lightened, the swoop ascended at greater speed, only to stall. Thorsch threw a distraught glance over his shoulder. The Bith was pinned between the Vangok's teeth, mouth wide in a silent scream, black eyes dull, Thorsch's jacket still clutched in his dexterous hands. But there wasn't time for despair or anger. The repulsor lift came back to life, and Thorsch veered away even as he was falling. A roar battered his eardrums, and suddenly the YT-1300 was practically alongside him, skimming the waves not 50 meters away. The quartet of coral skippers began firing from extreme range, their plasma projectiles cutting scalding trails through the white-capped crests. The old freighter's landing ramp was lowered from the starboard docking arm. It was clear what the ship's pilots had in mind. They were expecting him to come alongside and hurl himself onto the narrow incline. But Thorsch faltered. He knew the limitations of the swoop and, more important, his own. With the coral skippers approaching and the Vangok submerged who knew where beneath the waves, it was unlikely that he could even reach the freighter in time. Additionally, and despite what were obviously military-grade deflector shields, the freighter was being forced to make slight vertical and horizontal adjustments, which only decreased Thorsch's chances of clambering aboard. His grimace disappeared, and in its place came a look of sharp attentiveness. As sole bearer of the secret intelligence contained in the hollow wafer, he had to give it his best try. Tightening his grip, he banked for the sanctuary of the matte-black ship. Crouched at the top of the extended ramp, Han peered down at the rushing water not 20 meters below. Wind and salt spray howled through the opening, blowing his hair every which way and making it difficult for him to keep his eyes open. "Captain Solo," C-3PO said from the ring corridor. Princess Leia wishes you to know that the swoop is approaching. Apparently the pilot feels confident that he can complete the transfer to Millennium Falcon without suffering too much internal damage or perishing in the attempt. Han threw the droid a wide-eyed look. Perishing? Certainly the odds are against him. If he were piloting a speeder bike, perhaps. But swoops are notorious for going out of control at the slightest provocation. Han nodded grimly. A former swoop racer, he knew that C-3PO was right. Taking in the situation now, he wondered if even he could make the jump. "I'm going to the bottom," he shouted. C-3PO cantered his golden head. "Sir?" Han made a downward motion. "The bottom of the ramp." "Sir, I have a bad feeling." The wind drowned out the rest of the droid's words. Han crabbed down to the base of the ramp, where he could hear the Falcon's belly turret slicing through the agitated peaks of the waves. A distinctive throbbing sound captured his attention. The swoop was beginning to angle for the ramp. The pilot, a genet of all species, took his right hand off the hand grips just long enough to signal Han with a wave. Considering that even that slight movement sent the swoop into a wobble, there was simply no way the genet would be able to let go completely, especially not with the Falcon adding to the turbulence of the sea itself. Han reconsidered, then swung around to C-3PO. "3PO, tell Leia we're going with Plan B." The droid raised his hands to his head in distress. "Captain Solo, just the sound of that makes me worry." Han raised his forefinger. "Just tell Leia, 3PO. She'll understand." "Plan B?" "That was precisely my reaction," C-3PO said in an agitated voice. "But does anyone ever listen to my concerns?" "Don't worry, 3PO. I'm sure Han knows what he's doing." "That is hardly a comforting thought, Princess." Leia swung back to the console and allowed her eyes to roam over the instruments. "Plan B," she mused. "What can Han have in mind?" She placed him squarely in her thoughts, then smiled in sudden revelation. "Of course." Her hands slid switches while she studied the displays. Then she sat away from the console in contemplation. Yes, she decided at last, she supposed it could be done, though it would mean relying largely on the attitude and braking thrusters, and hoping that they didn't stall or fail. She looked over her shoulder at C-3PO, who had evidently followed her every move and manipulation. "Tell Han I've got everything worked out." "Oh, dear," the droid said, turning and exiting the cockpit. "Oh, dear." The four coral skippers were closing fast, lobbing plasma missiles into the blustery stretch of water between the swoop and the freighter. Thorsch dipped his head instinctively as one fireball plunged into the waves not 10 meters away. The ferocity of the impact geysered superheated water high into the air and sent the swoop into a sustained wobble. The freighter held to its course regardless, its top gunner keeping the coral skippers at bay with bursts of laser fire. A human male was crouched at the base of the landing ramp, his left arm wrapped around one of the telescoping hydraulic struts, and the fingers of his right hand making a gesture that on some worlds implied craziness on the part of its recipient. Just now, the twirling gesture meant something else entirely, though craziness was still a large part of it. Thorsch swallowed hard, just thinking about what the pilots were about to attempt. The human waved and scurried back up the ramp. Decelerating slightly, Thorsch fell in behind the freighter, giving it wide berth. Above the strained throbbing of the swoop's repulsor lift, he heard the sudden reverberation of the YT-1300's retro and attitude thrusters. Then, scarcely surrendering momentum, the freighter began to rotate 90 degrees to starboard, bringing the boarding ramp almost directly in front of the tottering swoop. "Take the jump," Han said, mostly to himself. "Now." He was back in the pilot's chair, his hands tight on the control yoke, when Leia feathered the thrusters, cheating the Falcon through its quarter turn. Flying sideways, Han could see the coral skippers that had a second earlier been behind the ship, as well as the swoop, which was flying just off the blunt tip of the starboard docking arm. Hoping to minimize the chances of the pilot's overshooting his mark and smashing headlong into the bulkhead at the top of the ramp, Han adjusted the Falcon's forward speed to match that of the swoop. "He's accelerating," Leia said. 3PO, Meow! Han yelled over his right shoulder. Our guests coming aboard! Glancing out the right side of the viewport, he saw the Jennet leap the swoop toward the ramp, the Falcon's narrow but open mouth. Now, he told Leia. Deftly, she fed power to the attitude thrusters, allowing the ship to complete a full clockwise rotation, even as a series of crashing sounds were echoing their way into the cockpit from the ring corridor. Han winced and scrunched his shoulders with each clang and crash, mentally assessing the damage, but keeping his fingers crossed that the Jennet pilot was faring better than the interior of the docking arm. No sooner did the ramp telltale on the console flash red, indicating that the docking arm had sealed tight, than Han yanked back on the control yoke, and the Falcon clawed its way into Selvarus's open sky, dodging volleys of molten fire from pursuing coral skippers. The quad laser replied with packets of cohesive light, brilliant green, even against the backdrop of the heaving sea.
Captain Solo, he's alive, C-3PO called with dramatic relief. We're all alive.
Exhaling slowly, Han sank back into the seat, but without lifting his hands from the yoke. The coral skippers were already lagging behind when the Falcon rocketed over the summit of the volcano, straight through dense clouds of gritty smoke, climbing rapidly on a column of blue energy. The ship was halfway to starlight when the shaken Jennet appeared at the cockpit hatchway, one bare arm draped over Meow's shoulders, the other around C-3PO's.
"You must have a hard head," Han said.
Grinning faintly, Leia looked at her husband.
"He's not the only one."
Han glanced at her in false chagrin, then nodded his chin to the female Nogri.
"Take our guest to the forward cabin and provide him with whatever he needs."
"I'll get the med pack," Leia said, leaving her chair.
She set her headset on the console and looked at Han again.
"Well, you did it."
"We," Han amended. Casually, he stretched out his arms. "You know, you're never too old for this sort of thing."
"You haven't outgrown it, that's for sure."
He studied her.
"What, you have?"
She placed her right hand on his cheek.
"You're a danger to yourself and everyone around you. But I do love you, Han."
He smiled broadly as Leia hurried from the cockpit.